Hey, by the way, I really want you guys to head over to their website, nmmv.org, the National Museum of Military Vehicles. It's a world-class collection of historic military vehicles and artifacts honoring the service and sacrifice of veterans and their families, and it honors the history of American freedom. It's a beautiful website and gives you a real sense of what is going on over there. Its founder and chairman, by the way, Dan Starks, joins us. By the way, as somebody, I can tell you this right now. We live in New Orleans. Of course, the World War II Museum is here. But I got to tell you, for anybody that heads up to Wyoming, this is a place you want to check out. We are thrilled to have them here. Hey, Dan, good morning. Welcome back.
Good morning, Jimmy. Thank you so much for having me back.
You got it. So we talked a little bit about the mission, and, you know, the mission is more than just to be a receptacle of information or a place where people can see the things that actually rolled in wars and in peacetime, helping the military do their jobs. There is at the center of this, and it goes to a later point we'll get to, you want to also make it a rally place for veterans and their families to go to and know not only are they being honored in the exhibits, but there is support and friends waiting for them as well, correct?
Yeah, that's absolutely right. Our goal is to make every single day Veterans Day, every single day Memorial Day. And as we bring veterans and veterans' families and people that have good relationships with people who've been veterans, we find that there's a need for more information, better connection between the vast majority of us like me who have not provided military service and the small percent of Americans who've done the heavy lifting for all of the rest of us. And as we expand our relationships with the veteran community, it's clear there's just a lot of unmet need. There's a very high suicide risk. There's a challenge that most veterans have as they transition out of military service back into civilian life. And so we're here for them, and we're working to connect veterans with resources available to help them, and we work to provide those resources ourselves to help veterans and their families get on with the rest of their lives after their military service.
Yeah, and that's the thing too, is that you know in many ways you have the same mission that our friends over at the Veterans Museum in Columbus, Ohio do, where it is both a memorial and a museum, that the idea that the best museums about military history and U.S. history are not just museums, they're memorials, but they're also living centers of communities kind of gathering together. Can you talk a little bit about the collection, the idea that, you know, we have a lot of guys out there on the road, truck drivers, who often get a chance because they get those breaks if they plan properly or if they have families and they decide to go on a great trip out to the American West, get a chance to check this stuff out. Walk me into the museum. I'm visiting, and I've got my two nephews who I just adore, and they walk in with me. Where do we go? What do we see?
You see the largest private collection of military vehicles in the world. I have a total of a little over 500 military vehicles focused on United States ground vehicles, but also including a few boats and a few aircraft. The very first thing people see when they come into the museum is our world-class collection of small arms, our unknown soldier weapons vault. We have over 300 small arms in that weapons vault, a number of Class 3 fully functioning automatic weapons, Class 3 destructive devices, grenade launchers, machine guns. The very first thing that a person sees going into the weapons vault is a musket that is the Liberty Bell of American firearms, the most famous firearm in American history. It's the musket that fired the very first shot at the very first battle of the very first United States military. The first branch of the United States military was the Army. It was formed by the Continental Congress on June 14th, 1775, just 3 days after the first American Army was formed. We fought the British at the Battle of Bunker Hill. That's the battle where Colonel Prescott ordered the Patriots, "Don't fire until you see the whites of their eyes." The New Hampshire Patriot who brought our musket to the fight, a guy named John Simpson, is known to have fired that first shot because he disobeyed that order to hold fire until the British were right on the Patriot lines. He took an early shot, hit a British officer on horseback. The battle then ensued. The American officers then conducted a court-martial the morning after the Battle of Bunker Hill to educate this first army of American patriots, all volunteers, that even though they were volunteers, now that they were in the military, when the officers issued an order It wasn't a suggestion. The members of this First Army had to obey that order. So to educate the Patriots, they conducted a court-martial to determine who fired that first shot. That's how we know this many years later, without any doubt, who fired the first shot. It was established by court-martial 24 hours after the battle. And so Simpson survived the war. He returned home, took his weapon back home with him. It stayed in his family until 2019. The museum was already under construction. We had no idea that this musket existed, that we might be able to get our hands on it. But we were fortunate enough to do it. And it's really, it's the historically the most famous artifact we have in the entire museum. It has nothing to do with military vehicles.
Well, I'll tell you this too about that rifle, that musket, and why I think it's so important too, because it is also, not only is it the first time that an actual Continental Army takes the field, it is one of the great examples of winning because you lose. Because what people don't know about that particular battle, I know you know this, is that Colonel Prescott proved to both the French and Spanish observers on the day, wait a minute, if we arm these guys, they can win. It's the first time it is a matter of simply running out of ammunition. They simply ran out of supplies that day. And that is a really incredible artifact, by the way. I can imagine how proud you are to actually have that standing in your... and by the way, the musket, you can make a case that that was the only vehicle they really had in the Revolutionary War in regards to being able to deliver something. By the way, you guys actually don't just have stuff there on the ground in the museum, but I want to talk about that stuff for a second before we move on to some of your educational programs. Talk to me a little bit about some of the things that people will recognize in regards to some of those vehicles and some of the things that might take them by surprise.
Sure. Yeah, well, we have the earliest vehicle we have is a very rare World War I American light tank, the very first tank manufactured by the United States. It's an M1917 tank. Modeled after the French version of the 6.5-ton tank, but this M1917 is one of only 20 surviving examples of 900 some versions of this tank that were ever manufactured. And our tank has the original engine still in it, and it still drives. So that's the most expensive item in the whole museum, and just a real treat to be able to share with everybody. And then we have a variety of other World War I vehicles of all sorts, lights, a Liberty truck, for example, an American World War I ambulance, one of only two restored operable British 1915 World War I ambulances. And then after the World War I collection, we have a very extensive collection of all kinds of vehicles from World War II, mostly American vehicles, but both armor and light skin, tracked vehicles, wheeled vehicles, Indian and Harley-Davidson motorcycles. We have a few German, Australian, British, Canadian, Russian vehicles as well, but we focus on the American vehicles. We then go into a Korean War gallery, where we have a broad expanse of the main vehicles used by the United States during the Korean War, really capped by an M26 Pershing main battle tank that's fully operable. After that, we take visitors through our Vietnam War gallery, where we have, for example, a fully operable UH-1B Huey helicopter that served in combat in Vietnam and has repaired battle damage visible on it. We have every major ground vehicle that the United States used during the Vietnam War as well. Outside of the galleries that we have, I'll mention only 229 of my 500 vehicles are actually embedded in displays in the museum. We ran out of room for the rest of them. So we have another 100 or so vehicles sitting outside the museum that people can see. We have additional vehicles that we drive in our 4th of July parade. We have vehicles from the Gulf Wars, vehicles from the Global War on Terror. So really just a tremendous expanse of vehicles ranging from World War I right up through the present. A vehicle vehicle we have that people wouldn't expect to see is the very first helicopter drone weapon developed and fielded in 1962. It was designed to take out Soviet submarines. It was an anti-submarine helicopter drone. So we've got Sherman tanks that people would expect to see, and we've got a drone helicopter that people would say, who knew that even existed back then, and lots of things in between.
And by the way, you have wonderful exhibits, too, and there's some beautiful curation in the museum. If you guys actually spend any time on the website, you'll see some really great videos of the stuff that is there and the stuff that they have. You have stuff including exhibits like the George Patton exhibit. There are all sorts of different things that people can check out. The George Patton, George S. Patton Jr. Gallery exhibits examples of America's first motor vehicles, because in many ways, that's the humanity of what we're doing here. It's not just vehicles, but anybody that knows their military history knows the importance of Patton's contribution to tank warfare and tank culture, and understanding how these devices could be used and what their, you know, what their basic use was in regards to moving this country's move towards liberating Europe forward. And there's all kinds of stuff of this. It's a beautiful one. I'm still trying to figure out what it is of the men in the snow, with the snow in the background. Is that from the bulge? Is that from the forest? Is that what we're looking at there?
You're exactly right. The Battle of the Bulge began December 16th, 1944, during one of the coldest winters in decades. And so that winter scenario is very characteristic of the Battle of the Bulge, and the images that you see on the website are actual historic images of the United States troops during the Battle of the Bulge.
Yeah, it's interesting, too, because a lot of people aren't aware of the fact that he remains the only man to turn an army 180 degrees in the middle of a major conflict and actually be able to turn on an enemy and turn the tide of a major German offensive attempt to stalemate the war. All of this stuff is there, by the way. It's a big space, by the way, guys. We're not talking about a roadside attraction here. We're talking about it is the National Museum of Military Vehicles, and it is a beautiful place. It also is a place that's set up for curation and education as well. You get a lot of school groups in there. You get a lot of people who also, I had a question for you. You guys are, like I said, the final kind of step of a museum. Is it a place where people can come and do research? Do you have archives as of yet?
Oh yeah, we have a research library, in it we have an extensive collection. It's actually, as far as I know, it's a complete collection of every technical manual and every operating manual for every single U.S. Ground vehicle in World War II and extending into the Korean War and in large part also the Vietnam War. So we've got just tremendous research capability.
And by the way, I want to kind of give a little background on you, Dan, because it's important. You know, I know you know this, that the reason the World War II Museum is in New Orleans is because it began as the D-Day Museum. And it began as the D-Day Museum because Andrew Higgins made the boats that, in fact, hit the beaches of Normandy. And they made them in the city of New Orleans and the surrounding areas. Talk to me a little bit about your own decision, your own decision to kind of place this museum here in Wyoming, in this quaint little town near your ranch. Talk to me about the brainchild of that, to give people a sense of sometimes just a great idea and a notion that starts in a bit of inspiration.
Yeah, it started out just anecdotally. My wife and I relocated to the wilds of Wyoming here in the Rocky Mountains. Our house is up at 8,400 feet of elevation. We came out here after I spent 32 years in the cardiovascular medical device business to retire and just kind of get away from it all and have a major change in lifestyle. No plans to build a museum. And I ran across an ability to buy one derelict 30-ton paperweight World War II Sherman tank for $50,000 back in 2011, and bought it only planning to have one tank. I bought it with the aspiration of finding someone who could restore it to driving condition so my wife and I could drive it in the Du Bois 4th of July parade. And from that one tank, just to have something to help celebrate American independence, that expanded into the collection that I have now. And as the collection began to expand, and we're living out here in Wyoming full time, we kept getting encouraged. Boy, you ought to make a museum out of this and share it with everybody. At the time, these vehicles were just on our private ranch, and the only way people could see them was if they had my private cell phone number and asked to come for a private viewing. So 2016, we decided, okay, let's share this with everybody who's interested, and let's create a museum. But by then, we were committed. We're Wyomingites now, and we weren't going to move. So we were happy to share things, but it had to be where we lived. So, and you know, just kind of serendipitously, okay, well, then we're going to build this world-class 160,000 square foot museum and expanding museum right here where we live in a town of, you know, just outside a town of only 911 people.
I know that's the killer. I was, you know, I just thought for myself, and I'm pretty good with geography, and I thought, well, maybe it's a town that has a nice little population that I wasn't aware of. And I said, no, I don't think so. And then I looked it up and I went, holy mackerel. And it's like, and that there it sits, you know, this 160,000 square foot National Museum of Military Vehicles right off of Highway 26. Unbelievable.
It's just not where, yeah. No one expects to see it.
Yeah, it's just, it's amazing. It's amazing. It takes the breath away about, you know, Napoleon often said that imagination rules the world. And this is one of those cases where that idiom has actually been proved absolutely true. I mean, the idea that it's visionary. I mean, there's a joy to this. There's an ebullient joy to want to share your passion and to find out how many people actually share this passion. Because you guys get attendance. You get people out there who would make that pilgrimage, don't they?
We've got people who come from all over the country. Yeah, and I mean people from other countries as well, but people from all over the country. You know, I look at us as aspiring to be like and on the track to be like the Baseball Hall of Fame. The Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, what's it doing there? I know what it's doing there, but I mean, it's kind of
National
out in the middle
Comedy
of nowhere.
Center. The National Comedy Center is located in Lucille Ball's hometown. I don't know if you know this, but but here's something else too that the William Cody Museum of the West is considered among people the second or third greatest museum in the United States, and it is. It's not, I mean, to call it the middle of nowhere. Also, we had the thing is you live in a beautiful place where a lot of people, you know, often want to find the wonder of America. But I mean, it's amazing. If you build it, people will come, won't they? It's just kind of wonderful. They showed up.
It is. And when people say you're in the middle of nowhere, I point out to them, well, Yellowstone National Park's in the middle of nowhere, too.
Exactly.
And people seem to find their way there.
And by the way, I always tell people, look, if you got a problem with that, where in the hell are you going to put a 160,000 square foot tank museum, essentially at its basic core, if you're going to put it in the city? I don't know where you locate that. This is like perfect for it. It's perfect
for
it.
It'd be a lot more expensive, that's for sure.
It's absolutely for sure. And you guys open those doors on Memorial Day of 2022. I can't imagine how you and your wife must have felt when those doors opened. You must have just been like, how did we get here? How did this happen?
Yeah.
You know, and it all started because you just wanted to fix up a tank for 4th of July parade. I mean, it is such a uniquely American story and so kind of worth digging into. I can't thank you enough for making the time. I know you want to make time. We mentioned it at the beginning. You have a deep concern, as many of our listeners do, as many of the veterans who actually come on this show do, for the number of American service members who, once they leave, are leaving us too early. And it's an important thing for you, is it not, that we actually call attention to that and we create spaces for these men and women to be able to heal and find people to talk to who let them know they care, right?
Absolutely. We just lost a friend a couple of, you know, just a few weeks back to another combat veteran to suicide, just completely horrible. And it's just too common of a story. And there are common causes. As we get a little smarter about the dynamics, veterans, not just combat veterans, veterans, but especially combat veterans, come out of an environment where they're very connected with other veterans serving, you know, other Americans serving along with them. They've got purpose. They're getting feedback. They know exactly why they're getting out of bed every morning, and then after they leave the military, they're kind of cast in a with a mixed crowd. Sometimes people who know absolutely nothing about what it is that these veterans accomplished on behalf of all of the rest of us. The connection is gone. The sense of tribe is often gone. The sense of purpose is often gone. And people often have some combination of post-traumatic stress and traumatic brain injury. And it's just it's so easy for them to become isolated. And the warrior code for men and women while they're in military service is to suck it up, deal with whatever comes your way. And so there are a lot of kind of dynamics that make it hard for an isolated veteran to ask for help, and they end up resorting to that absolutely extreme self-help that is just horrible. So helping to restore connection, helping to restore purpose, helping to have people be reinforced every single day that what they did is seen and appreciated and valuable and honored, and we're giving back to them. Those are all things that we can do. Employment for veterans, above all, one thing that we found is if you reach out to veterans with the idea that, hey, I want to help you, that often is not so productive. But if we reach out to veterans who are in pain and ask them to help other people, boy, they're all about it. And that then it's kind of like a back door to help them while they're busy helping others to regain a sense of purpose, to really regain reinforce what had been a very strong sense of self-worth. So this is a huge problem. We're just nibbling at it, and we're working to encourage as many others as possible, both to raise awareness and to help us nibble at this.
I have to tell you, the message continues to ring out through the country. If we give people a mission, they often find a way to move forward. And Dan, I got to tell you, what a mission you have given both your friends in the community that you live in and you love, and everybody across the country. Guys, I'm going to keep on pushing this. If you're out there in the Great West, as many of you are when you call and are part of our show, nmmv.org. You can find them on YouTube. There's a lot of great content there. We'll get you back on, Dan, talk about all that great content over there on the YouTube channel. It's NMMV USA on YouTube, on the Book of Face. You can find them at NMMV Wyoming, YW, and then NMMV USA on X, formerly known as Twitter. Thank you, Dan. You're welcome back anytime. We loved having you. I hope you enjoyed yourself as much as we did.
I certainly did, Jimmy. Thank you so much.
You got it. Guys, this has been Road Gang Radio. Its producer is Andre Thibodeau. He and I are the executive producers of this show, and happy to take you down the road for it. Hope you guys have had a good time. We have as well. What a great show. Want to thank everybody that has been involved in this show this morning, along with the good pastor, Kevin Lindsay, Dave Parker. Nice meeting a guy named Dave Parker, not the Cobra, but pretty close to the Cobra. And of course, Benjamin came on talking about lifestyle changes. Benjamin Smith, Tom Piazza, great hour of radio. Ooh. We're going to get that pulled and get that cooking up there. You got to hear that. It's must listen to. And then the National Museum of Military Vehicles. Always good to have Dan returning to the show now that it's opened. He actually was here right before it opened, dude. They were actually getting ready to put the whole enchilada together, and Dan came on about 6 months before they actually did the thing. So good to have Dan here in the aftermath and hear that it's growing by the minute. $100 million facility over there. If you get a chance, go look at that website. It's a big place. If you got to put tanks any place, man, make sure it's big. Yeah. They'll be sticking tanks in small buildings. Yeah.